Hey everyone, I'm Jason V, and welcome to Local Color, a Baltimore podcast. My guest today is Letta Moore, founder, owner, and operator of Knit, Soy, and Metal, an online business that sells handmade scarves and jewelry and small batch hand poured candles with scents such as lavender, chamomile, and summer rain. Today we'll talk about her life before Knit, Soy, and Metal, what spurred her to take the entrepreneurial leap, and the craft of artisanship. Letta, welcome to Local Color.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So let's just jump right in. Tell me your story. Where are you from?
So originally from, I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma for a while, but I was born in Okinawa, Japan. My father was in the military, met my mother in East Africa, and they went to Okinawa and had me. There's some years in between that I'm leaving out because my brother, I have an older brother, so he was born prior. And then I was born. So then we moved to Oklahoma. I lived there for about 8 years. And when my dad retired from the military, he moved back home to Baltimore. And we've been here ever since.
You say your mother's East African. What country is she from?
Eritrea.
What's the cuisine there? Because I've had Ethiopian food before.
Very similar.
Are you a fan of injera?
Oh, yeah. We call it taita.
Taita?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, what language do they speak in Eritrea?
Yes, they speak Tigrinya.
Tigrinya?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a local dialect or is that like the national language?
It's their language. And I guess in Ethiopia they speak Amharic. So the alphabet is the same, but the language is different.
Okay. Did your mother ever teach you any growing up?
Very little. My father's American, so we spoke English in our household.
What was your time like growing up in Tulsa, Oklahoma? Did you enjoy it?
While I was there, I didn't know anything other than Tulsa. But I will say that moving to Baltimore was definitely a change in culture. I always tease when people ask me would I ever go back to Oklahoma. I'm like, absolutely not. There were about 10 black people, and 4 of us moved to Baltimore. So
that's how it always happens. It's like, there's only 3 black kids in my class,
yeah.
And the 2 of them were me and my brother. And
right.
The other one we didn't even like,
right.
So that just made it worse.
Exactly. So yeah, no, I have no desire to go back to Oklahoma. I love Baltimore. So
gotcha. Now let's just jump right into Knit, Soy, and Metal. Does entrepreneurship run in your family?
It absolutely does. My father is a small business owner as well. He owns a commercial janitorial cleaning company and has for 20 years or so. That's where I get my risk-taking from. But both my parents have extremely hard work ethics. So I get kind of like the grinding and the working hard from both of them.
Now, speaking of risk-taking, how did your parents feel when you told them that you wanted to be an entrepreneur, kind of following your father's footsteps? Because it seems like parents will take risks for their children, but when it comes to their children, they kind of want them to play it safe so that they can be successful, or they just want to play it safe at least so they can eat. Were your parents supportive of your decision?
They have been 100% supportive, actually. Very encouraging. My parents have been kind of like the catalyst that pushed me into a lot of different things that I've done in my life. My parents are the ones who encouraged me to buy my house when I did 10 years ago at the mature age of 27. Not so. So when I was telling them about the business, they were very encouraging and have been, you know, super supportive about it as well. Yeah.
Tell me the story about starting Knit, Soy, and Metal. Did you ever have a moment where you thought, like, oh, I can actually do this, or I can make a living off of this?
Yeah, because, you know, just based off of my work ethic and just based off of the fact that failure is just not an option for me. I think that I've had my moments where I kind of, not I won't say doubted, but just maybe got nervous. and just wondered if I could really do this. And then I had my moments where I'm kind of like, yeah, you can. Like, what are your other options? Your other options would be that you stop working towards something. And that's that's not even in my nature to do.
Once you have something in mind, you just don't let go. You want to see it through.
Absolutely. And I can be very impulsive. You know, when I want something, I want it immediately. And so it has to get done right now. So, yeah.
Do you ever feel like that's actually gotten you into some trouble?
Sure. I've been in some relationships that I probably shouldn't have been in because of that. But for the most part, for the business, it's been a great strategy. In my personal life, maybe not so much. Yeah.
I think that risk taking and even making mistakes, and as you mentioned before, you did say that failure is not an option. But I do think that taking those kind of risks and making mistakes, they are learning experiences. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Now, in your Strangers with Style interview, you mentioned a mantra that you have. Can you tell us what that mantra is and how you apply it to business and life?
Sure. So the mantra that I adopted was that failure is not finite, basically. It's only a spectrum of time in your life's journey unless you stop moving. So as long as I continue to move forward, I won't fail. So, and I believe that for everyone, it's not just me. It's not my own, but I think that everybody, as long as you continue to move forward and not dwell on, you know, the things that, that might have tripped you up or might've been obstacles or, you know, and you take those same things and you learn from them, and then just press forward, you're already ahead of the game, you know, you're already succeeding.
Where did you hear that mantra or outlook on life from? Is that something you developed yourself or did you hear from someone else?
Yeah, I made that up. No, I didn't make that up. So I went to a talk series called Creative Mornings, which is an international organization, and they have a chapter here in Baltimore. And every month they get together and it's free, so anyone can go. But it's... they have different themes. And that particular one that I'd gone to was the first one I'd ever been to, and that theme was failure. So they had different local artists, small business people, creators, kind of get up and tell their story about, you know, failure and how they overcame, or, you know, what things that they had gone through. And someone got up and said that. I can never remember exactly who it was. There were so many people that spoke that day, but it was something that resonated with me, and it just kind of stuck with me. The other thing that someone said was that to trust your process, and that's also something that I've adopted.
Can you explain more of that? What exactly does that mean to you?
So, again, because I can be very impulsive, and, you know, I would say that in my career as a marketing director, I was a planner, a chronic planner, and because everything needed to have a plan, a backup plan to a backup plan. And so, there's this, I guess a saying, it's called analysis paralysis, where you can analyze something so much that you just don't move forward.
Yes.
With it. So, so I used to do that, relentlessly. So there were two extremes. There was either that, or there was, in, you know, me being impulsive and just needing to have everything done right now. And so my process, those are my processes, you know. I can either plan to the point of not moving forward, or I can be impulsive and get things done. And so those are the two ways that I kind of work my process. And so I have to trust myself with whichever way makes most sense at the time. So if my planning process keeps me following the rules, but my impulsivity propels me forward. So those are my processes that kind of keeps me moving forward with my business.
Do you ever feel like you turn them on and off? Like, all right, today, like I have like this kind of work to do, so I need to be very methodical. And then, you know, another day you're like, okay, I just got to create. So I just got to go. Don't even think about it. You think it's a kind of like a on-off type thing?
Absolutely. That's exactly how it works. You know, that's exactly how it works. When I know that I need to get something done, then I don't think about it. I just do it. When I know that, like, when it comes to paying my taxes, then I know I have to kind of plan this process out, so.
Yes, oh man, it's getting to be that time. Tax season is coming soon, right? Isn't it like from January to, what, April?
Yeah, and then... Well, then when you're in the retail business, you pay sales taxes quarterly. So that's never fun.
Wait, you pay sales taxes?
Well, when people purchase my products, they pay sales tax, and I have to send that money into the government. They want their money quarterly.
I never knew what that was. Wow. Yeah, well, thank you for enlightening me.
Sure. Interesting. They want their money.
Uncle Sam's going to get his money.
That's right.
No matter whether you're in jail or not, he's still getting paid.
That's right.
Gotcha. Now, getting back to mantras and not being afraid to fail, are you religious or spiritual? What? How do you view life? How do you live your life?
I'm not religious. I don't want to offend anyone, but I'm not religious. And I don't know that I would even say spiritual, to be quite honest. I really just try to be a good person. You know, that's ultimately my way of life, you know, just do what's right. And I think that everyone has kind of like this innate moral compass, you know. And I think that that dictates kind of how we are with one another, with ourselves. And so that's pretty much what I stick to. Yeah, that's all. That's it.
Just being a good person.
Yeah, just being a good person.
I try to be the same way as well, but it's difficult because when someone's not being a good person to me, it's just so easy to give in and be nasty to them as well. But you know that ultimately, you might feel better for a little bit if you're mean to someone, but at the end of the day, when you look back, you're just like, oh man, I shouldn't have did that, or I shouldn't have said that. It would have been so much better to just kind of like avoid the situation or not argue with that person because I didn't get anything solved. Do you ever have those moments where you're just like, I don't want to be a good person right now. I want to be selfish.
Honestly, no, because I think that when that happens, you're allowing them to control you. So I'm going to be exactly who I am all the time, despite you. So no, I mean, someone else's actions don't really affect me. I'm going to be true to myself. The only thing that can get under my skin on a regular basis is if I see someone being treated unfairly, then I kind of have to say something.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So if you're ever out at a restaurant and you see someone being rude to the server, you're like, excuse me.
Right.
I feel the same way. I won't say anything unless I know the full story. Like if the server is giving bad service, maybe not yell at them, but, you know, give constructive criticism somehow. So I think it's interesting that you said that when people are rude to you or things like that happen, you don't let them get to you because you said they end up taking your power away. Did you read that somewhere? Like, how did you come up with that mindset?
Not in those exact words, but I did, you know, for people who have road rage, I read this book long time ago called, you know, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and It's All Small Stuff, something like that. And they said something about people with road rage, or if someone cuts you off or something like that, then they were like, you know, let them have their accident somewhere else is what the book actually said. But, you know, in my opinion, I don't think that people cut people off deliberately. I think that oftentimes it's an accident, like they didn't see you or they were distracted or whatever. And so I think as long as we don't take a lot of things personally, you know, maybe it's not a personal attack against us. Maybe the person's having a bad day. Maybe, you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt kind of keeps me in a mind frame that doesn't, you know, that doesn't judge.
I've heard that in terms of traffic as well, and something that I've tried to apply to my life is we judge people by their actions, but we judge ourselves by our intentions.
Exactly.
And I think that we should do the same thing to other people. And I think that road rage and driving plays a very big part in it because, you know, nobody likes it when someone turns without using their signal or something like that. But then when you do it, you're just like, oh, it's okay. I was busy, you know, or I was in the middle of something. So I think that's a good way to live. It's okay to let people get to you, but it's not what they do. It's how you respond to
Absolutely.
It. And I think once you are cognizant of, how your mood is a product of how you act or how you carry yourself, then you can kind of really develop that sense of I guess the path of non-resistance,
yes.
Something like
mm-hmm,
that. Mm-hmm. And people will think
least.
That.
I think it's least resistance.
Yeah, the path of least resistance.
Something
like a saying
that.
Or
yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember it either, but it's basically like it might not. Taking the high road might not always feel good, but it's usually the best thing to do because you don't want to give in to your baser self because that's when bad things happen.
Absolutely. I agree.
So with Nitsoyan metal, everything is handmade. Candles are hand-poured. The scarves. And you said it's not just Infinity scarves?
Right. So I started out doing Infinity scarves. And I honestly, you know, based on the male friends that I have that don't wear scarves, I just figured that women would be the most, I guess, purchasers or consumers of my products. And so when I started making the scarves, I was only thinking of them. And so when I had some of my male friends come to me like, hey, you know, can you make me a scarf? And I don't want to wear an Infinity scarf. So I started making straight scarves as well for guys. So, or unisex, you know, some women prefer those as well too.
All right. How do you have a
pattern?
Minimum?
Oh.
Yeah. Actually talk about your pattern.
No, just, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's a simple straight scarf. I just try to keep the product as simple as possible. I'm a minimalist. I don't like a whole lot of, you know, flash. So,
Out by blending in.
Yeah, I don't even know if do I blend in?
No, I think not. When I say you stand out by blending in, because I like to think that my way of dress is mostly like business casual. But I think that you were like you were saying, not a lot of flash. You stand out by not having the flash. It's like it's not what you do; it's what you don't do that really makes the statement. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So while people can have like crazy colored scarves or something like that, the fact that you just have like a nice one or maybe two color scarf that makes more of a statement. You
know, I think so. Yeah, and I agree with that. Like I think that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it, yeah, just like you said, it stands out in that way.
Okay.
Because it's simple and it's, you know.
Gotcha. Do you have a specific or do you have a set length? Because I've had some scarves that are too short. And mm-hmm. when I try to like do the Parisian knot,
mm-hmm.
it just gets all bunched up right here. Do you always do a set length or do you just do what people ask?
A little bit of both. So typically it's about. I am about 5'1", so the scarves are typically a little taller than me. And then, you know, if someone requests a longer scarf, then that's fine too.
Now with your scarves, the candles, and the jewelry as well, all of that's handmade. What do you think has contributed to the explosion in demand for handmade stuff? Because everything's like, you know, grass-fed, farm-raised, farm-to-table, farmer's market, like... What do you think's contributed to the demand and that kind of stuff?
I think it's people's desire to be more socially responsible and human. And, you know, and when I say human, I mean like the human experience, you know, knowing who they're buying from, knowing what community they're a part of and supporting that community. So I think that it's that desire to want to, you know, to want to give back. When I purchase products locally, that's how I feel when I'm doing it. I want to give back. I want to contribute back to my own community. And I want to feel the experience of, you know, knowing the person that I purchased from.
Do you think that businesses have a social responsibility to actually make quality products and be environmentally sustainable? Like, do you think that is a cornerstone of running a business?
Yeah, well, I think it's the right thing to do. I think that if you are living in this world and you're taking, you know, whatever resources it is that you're using, I think it's important to give back, you know, in some type of facet, in some type of way. So, yeah, I think it is their responsibility because, you know, growth is inevitable. We need to all be able to grow. And these... you know, retailers or businesses or corporations need to contribute to that growth and not just take from it, you know?
Do you think we are moving towards a future where businesses that don't adapt to that mindset of giving back and being responsible for the things that they do in order to make the product that they make. Do you think we're moving toward a future where those kinds of businesses who do not adhere to that they won't be able to survive?
I won't say that. What I will say, though, is that there is a natural ebb and flow that kind of takes place in the marketplace. And sometimes the big box retailers are the popular place to be because of the affordability factor. And then sometimes it's the small artisanal businesses, you know, that end up being where to go because people want to feel like they're contributing back to their communities. I think that it just depends on where we are and within our, you know, economy, you know, what people can afford to do. I think that for the most part, people would like to be able to support small businesses, but there's definitely a price differential between, you know, these corporations that can afford to, it's okay.
Okay. I did it again. You think that there's a, like some of those bigger corporations can really afford to cheaply mass produce products?
Absolutely. And then if they're hiring people, they pay, you know, minimum wage. If I was to hire someone, I would be paying more than minimum wage. I'd want to pay someone what, you know, they could afford to live off of.
A livable wage.
Absolutely.
A current conversation that that people are talking about now is raising minimum wage for fast food workers and stuff. How do you feel about that?
I think that everyone should be able to take care of their families. I think that everyone should be able to sustain themselves. I don't think it's right that we have people working, because I worked in fast food. It's hard work, you know? My first job was in fast food. And while I was 16 and didn't need to take care of myself, there are people who work in these places that that need to take care of families. So they should be able to do that. You know, there's no reason why someone working a full-time job shouldn't be able to take care of their family or themselves, for that matter.
Well, what about everybody else? You know, what about the people who did go to school to learn a trade or learn something like that?
It's like the person who, let's say, for example, you and I decide that we're going to go into an investment together.
Right.
Okay. Let's say that I have all the money.
Okay.
Okay. So, I'm able to purchase exactly what it is that I need, right? Because I have all the money. But let's say you know how to renovate a house, right? So you have sweat equity, basically, in that investment, which is equally as important. So people who work in fast food are still contributing to the economic fiber of these United States. You know what I mean? They're still providing a service that, you know, you've used, I'm sure. So just because it might not be something that they had to go to school to obtain doesn't diminish their contribution.
Never thought about it like that.
And, you know, and to be quite honest, you know, who's to say that they can't? Who's to say that they shouldn't be able to? I mean, you have this, you know, this 1%, you know, of people who are making most of the money, and you have the 99% of us out here who are fighting with one another to make ends meet. They're not the enemy.
So let's get back to your business. What's a hardship or an obstacle that you faced when starting Knit, Sew, and Metal that kind of made you feel like you were in over your head? Have you ever had one of those experiences?
No. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a very calm person.
I can definitely tell.
Okay. So it's very rare that I ever feel like I'm in over my head. I approach every situation with kind of like a very clear mind. And I don't move faster than what I'm supposed to, you know? As a matter of fact, are you familiar with Gingy, the chocolates, Gingy chocolates? She has a little space in, Belvedere Square. It's in the market. Wonderful, wonderful person. Okay. She, and her chocolates are amazing. Her father works with her sometimes, and, his name is Guy. And I remember I was there in the market and he was speaking to someone. And he told her, you know, keep your head down and just work on your product, you know, and if it's good quality product, then people will come.
You stay in your lane.
Yeah. You won't have to make any announcements. And I listened to him on the side because I was eavesdropping. I listened to him and, you know, and I took heed to that. And, you know, and I just work on my product and just work on, you know, what I know how to do. And things have come to me oftentimes. And what an experience.
Would you consider yourself a lucky person at all? I feel like luck is when opportunity meets preparation. Would you agree with that?
You know, and it's funny that you put it that way, because I would say that I'm a lucky person, but, you know, I don't, and it's great that you describe it that way, because I don't want to sound, you know, like,
right,
you know,
I'm so awesome. Right. Like, things fall into my lap.
Right. And when those types of things happen, and I think that to myself, and I'm saying like, oh my gosh, like this, I'm so lucky. It's like, but you know, you work hard, and you know, I'm constantly working, and anyone who knows me knows that I'm constantly working at my goals, you know, and I never waver from them. Like, this is just it. Every time you can contact me, if you ask me, what are you doing? I'm knitting, making candles. I'm doing this, working on my website. You know, I'm always working. So, yeah. So when those types of things happen for me, it's very, very, I'm very fortunate and very grateful.
With your work and with you constantly being on the move and trying to expand your business, do you think that taking some downtime or even relaxing, do you think that is a part of the equation?
I won't say that I vacation. You know, when I have an opportunity, I definitely do that.
Where did you vacation to recently?
In November, I went to Miami.
Okay.
Yeah. For the first time, actually. I've been to Florida so many times, but never Miami.
Actually, so. I think I'm the same way. Well, I haven't been to Florida a lot, but the times I have been, I don't think I've ever been to Miami. And Florida's a lot bigger than I think people
realize
in your mind. Have you ever traveled back to East Africa, to your mom's country?
I have.
Did you do that when you were older, when you were younger?
When I was younger. I went back when I was younger, right after the referendum. So if you know a little bit of the history between Eritrea and Ethiopia had actually colonized Eritrea for several, you know, more than 30 years. They'd had a war. And in the early 90s, Eritrea won their freedom back and had a referendum. So we went right after that.
What was that experience like?
I hate to admit it, but, you know, I didn't appreciate it. I was 14 years old at the time, and we didn't have the internet. The internet was actually, right, yeah, we did not have the internet then. And so, you know, being in touch with friends, no, even like cellular phones was like, what? Like, there's not, you know. They were around. Cell phones were around back then,
Not everybody had one.
Exactly. And so, I don't even know if they had cell service in Eritrea at the time. They definitely didn't have running water where I was. So, so I just didn't appreciate it. You know, I have a 16-year-old daughter. And so, you know, traveling and, you know, seeing the world and, you know, encouraging her to kind of leave, you know, the States and stuff like that. Because of my experience when I was 14, I want her to kind of get an early start in traveling. And so fortunately enough for her, she's been to Costa Rica and she's been to Cuba. So, right.
Wait, like recently or before?
Yeah, she went over the summer.
Really?
Yeah.
How did she like it?
She loved it.
That's awesome.
She loved it.
Did she go for a specific reason or just because they had lifted the...
No, actually when she was planning to go, they had not lifted it yet.
Really?
They lifted it right before she left, but she was going with her school, so it didn't matter.
Oh, like that they, it wasn't, because I feel like before all this happened with the president and the United States and Cuba kind of talking again, it was illegal to go to Cuba, correct?
It was illegal to go for tourism.
Okay.
And as an American, you could go, mm-hmm. It just, you couldn't go from the United States. So
if I went to Mexico, I could go to Cuba?
Yeah.
Is that what she had to do, or did she just...
No, because by the time they left, they were able to go. They flew to Miami, and then, mm-hmm. You know, from there, they were able to get to Cuba. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Do you see a lot of your younger self in your daughter?
Mostly, I do. I definitely do. However, not necessarily in her taste in music, but...
what does she like to listen to?
Oh, my goodness. So her father and myself both, I love soul music, and her father is like a hip hop, connoisseur. He loves hip hop, and she listens to, Bring Me the Horizon or Fallout Boys or
Wait, Bring Me the Horizon is the name of a group.
Yeah, it's the name of a group. Okay. Yeah, they're like alternative rock bands.
So what's some of the, like what's the most recent thing that you bought or listened to that you were like, I'm feeling it?
Most recent?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. The last album that I purchased was probably Bilal's latest album.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you liking it?
Yeah, it's he can't do wrong. he's I think one of the most underrated musicians, artists out there. He's a genius. It's amazing.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to
okay.
Let's get back to Mitsui and metal. How long have you been doing that for?
So my actually October was my 1 year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How does it feel from last October to this October?
It's a little surreal. It's it happened so fast. Like it came around so fast, my 1 year anniversary. And I didn't do anything for it. And I keep telling myself that I will. So look out for that.
Do you sell your products in any stores, or is it just all online or at like SWAT, not SWAT meets, but you know, pop-up shops,
yeah,
or like Small Business Friday? Where can people find your stuff?
Sure. So I sell in Keeper's Vintage, which is a vintage store in Mount Vernon on Reed Street, 245 West Reed Street. I sell also in at Vita Baltimore, which is
at where?
Vita,
okay.
Yeah, it's in Belvedere Square. And then I also sell, which is my first location, at Perspectives Art Gallery in Ellicott City. It's on Main Street in Ellicott City.
Oh, in Old Ellicott City?
Yeah.
Is it near, what's it called? Bean Hollow?
I don't know where that is. It's not far from the wine store. The wine store is like right down the street from there. It's 8191 Main Street.
The wine store, like the restaurant, or is it an actual store?
No, it's an actual like wine shop, like a liquor store. But
what's it called?
Perspectives Art Gallery.
No, not the wine store.
I don't know the name of the wine store. I'm sorry. No, maybe it's called the Wine Bin, something like that.
Okay, no, that's fine. But then, so people can find your stuff there, and they can also find it online.
And they can find it online. I did do the pop-up shop for the holiday season at the Women's Exchange, which is the Made in Baltimore. They had a Made in Baltimore kind of pop-up with the Women's Exchange and what is it? The IA Collective. They did something together. They did kind of like a collaboration together there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually really good. I only sold the candles there, though.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Have you collaborated with any other local artists or businesses in Baltimore on any stuff?
Strangers with Style. Mm-hmm. I did with Olivia. She's phenomenal. She's got her ear to the ground. Like she knows what's going on out here. So I did a collaboration with her actually with my very first candle making workshop here in Baltimore. And that usually takes place at Artifact Coffee. So I do some work with them. I have a collaboration coming up with Gingy, the chocolate. Yep.
Okay.
That's right. And, so, I mean, I'm looking forward to doing more with more people.
How those collaborations work? Because, Gingy, it's a food stuff. It's something that you consume. Whereas a candle, while it is consumed, you don't eat it.
You shouldn't. You should not eat candles.
Sorry. And obviously a scarf is something you wear. How would a collaboration like that work?
So the way that we are planning to do it is we'll do a workshop, candle making workshop, and then there's a process that the candles need to cool to solidify. And during that process is when she will do a demo of chocolate making and hand out samples. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Would you ever have a chocolate scented candle?
Yes, actually.
Do you have one currently?
I do. It's actually, it's not chocolate scented, but it's, are you familiar with Baltimore's burger cookies?
Of course.
Yeah. So I have a burger cookie scented candle.
Really?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good. Now with everything that you do, the knitting and the hand pouring of the candles and the jewelry, are you ever worried about like, carpal tunnel syndrome or just arthritis or really anything happening in your hands?
No, I'm not, actually. I'm not. So you know what? Before we move to that, I'm also working on another collaboration with a jeweler. So because of the knits in this, because the knits and the soy take up so much of my time, the jewelry part of my business is a collaboration with local jewelers. So I'm working on a launch in the spring with Tracy Beal, who will be doing the metal portion of Knit Soy Metal. It'll be kind of like a metal by Tracy Beal kind of thing. Okay. We're looking forward to that.
But you're still never worried about no hand, no hand stuff?
No. No. I'm not, actually. I'm not careless. I'm not a careless person. So I think that for the most part, I mean, unless it's a freak accident that nobody else can, you know, can right. predict happening, I don't really worry about that.
Which one out of the knits, the soy and the metal, which one's the most dangerous?
Probably the soy, only because I'm dealing with fire. But if anyone has ever boiled water, then you're in the clear.
So. If you can't do that, you might just want to think about where you're headed in life.
That's right. So,
do you do everything at a workshop or is it at your house? How does the process work?
I do everything from home.
Do you have like an outback kiln or something like that? Are you like in the movies where they have like a blacksmith with a fire bellows? Your daughter comes out and you have like the mask
right.
on.
The flamethrower. Yeah. No, it's not like that at all. It's just literally like boiling water in my kitchen.
That's it.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I took that excitement. So, I see your face. It's just kind of like.
I was expecting something more.
Right.
Maybe more romantic, but I mean, you're doing it in the kitchen.
Well, I did I built a yurt outside in my backyard. I didn't do that. I'm sorry. Sorry.
I was going to say that was amazing because I've looked into a building though. There's like an alternative home option. And I think that those are good for people who want to travel or people who like don't plan on having kids.
Sure, sure.
What future plans do you have for Knit Soy and Metal? What's up next, if you can talk about it?
Well, all I know is, and I said this to Strangers of Style, and basically, you know, the sky's the limit. If I can think it, then I can do it. And that's ultimately it. I'm just kind of thinking and doing and thinking and doing. So I definitely have some things on the horizon. I don't like to put things out there until I know that things are actually definitely going to happen, but follow me and you'll see
okay.
everything that's going to happen.
Okay. When's your next candle workshop? Or should I just follow you to find out?
No. January 17th at Artifact.
What day is that?
It's a Sunday okay. from 5 to 7.
Well, Letta, I want to thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
Thank you.
Visit knitsoyandmetal.com to check out Letta's creations and shop. All orders over $45 get free shipping. Is that still correct?
Yes.
Okay, cool. You can also follow her business on Instagram at Knits Soy and Metal. Follow Local Color on Instagram at localcolorabp. Bookmark localcolorpod.tk in your browser. Special thanks to Skylar Newman for online support and Blueberry for media hosting and the PowerPress plugin. I'm Jason V, and this is Local Color. You did a very good job.
Thank you.